Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. What a week it's been, hasn't it? Lots of emotion going on here in the United States, and as I imagine elsewhere, as we try to evolve as a species. We try to evolve as a civilization, and lots has gone on with the United States federal government this week, with the confirmation of Kavanaugh. And many of us are feeling sadness, frustration, disappointment, and some people are excited. I know what I'm feeling, and I'm feeling we're taking many, many steps backwards. But the good thing is we're talking. The discussion is out. It is not behind closed doors. It is now out. People are protesting and screaming, and I hope we don't let up. We have to keep this conversation going. The conversation, of course, being about sexual assault. It's about women's rights. It's about people's rights. And we need to continue this conversation. It's about privilege. And when I talk about food and say it's all about food, it's connected to a lot of these ideas, because we are exploiting animals today. We've been exploiting animals for a long time, and we exploit many things. It's part of the human way of life. Humans have been exploiting since as far back as history can tell us. We exploit each other, we exploit the earth, we exploit other species. And we are evolving to recognize that and move to a place where we minimize exploitation or we eliminate exploitation. That's my vision. That's what I would like to see. Now, to do that, we have to evolve as individuals, and then we have to elect representatives to our government that will vote according to our wishes and expectations. And that's not happening right now. And it always happens this way, where the culture advances, the society advances, and the government is the slowest to move, the slowest to meet up to our level. And we're seeing that a lot now. I see we're in a big transition, and I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that we see positive change for all of this, because right now it doesn't feel good at all. And I recognize that we're talking about women's assault, sexual assault, not just to women, but to men as well. And it's out in the open, like I said. We're talking about it. All of that is good. That does not mean that we're not recognizing all of the other means of exploitation, all of the other communities and groups that experience exploitation and have been experiencing it for a long time. This is just one specific issue. There are many issues. And I would like to think that we're opening our eyes and moving forward on all of them. So back to choosing representatives that meet us at this evolved level, meet us at a place where we recognize how to improve society for everyone. That's why I'm excited about today. I'm excited about the interview I'm about to share with you, because we have one such representative in government today. It's local government, and that's where a lot of exciting things are happening. At the local level. So here in New York City, we have Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams. I'm going to read a little bit of his bio. You can see it all at brooklyn-usa.org. And I recommend you going there, because you can see the initiatives that he is working on, and perhaps that will inspire you to get your representatives, wherever you may be, to follow a similar path. For the past three decades, Eric L. Adams has served the residents of the city of his birth as a police officer, state senator, and coalition builder. And in November of 2013, he was elected to represent all of Brooklyn as borough president. Born in Brownsville and educated in the city's public school system, Eric is committed to ensuring Brooklyn's bright future by helping each and every Brooklynite reach his or her full potential. Throughout his career, Eric has been an effective advocate for Brooklyn, bringing people and communities together to create progressive change and working with both the private and public sectors to invigorate the borough's economy by encouraging job growth and investment in every neighborhood. Whether his beat was on the street or in the halls of government, Eric has always looked out for Brooklyn's working families and sought to protect our most vulnerable residents. He believes that government works best when everyone has a chance to be heard, and he has resolved to use his office to provide an opportunity for diverse groups to work together for the common good. I encourage you again to visit brooklyn-usa.org and read his full bio, because it is impressive and you will be inspired. But why would I want to interview Eric Adams on this program? It's all about food, because it is all about food. Eric Adams has a wonderful story to share, how food has affected his life, how he was able to turn around diabetes, and now he is committed to promoting healthy plant foods. I'm so excited about this. I had the opportunity to interview Eric Adams just a few days ago to share with you in this program today. Here it is. I am here with Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams. I'm actually here in Brooklyn Borough Hall, and I've never been here before. It's a fantastic, beautiful, impressive building, and the whole area is great. So thank you for giving me this time.
Thank you.
I want to talk about food. This show that I host is called It's All About Food, and I'm particularly interested in your story because it's a fabulous story. So let's just jump right into your brief history with a plant-based diet and what got you there.
So true. The name of your story is just really a powerful connection to this entire conversation.
It's all about food.
When you drill down on it, it is just really all about food. And we make it more complicated than it is, because we've made our diets more complicated than what they actually are. And when you look at the fact that we're no longer eating food, we're realizing that we're not living up to our optimum health by saying it's all about food. And I believe the name of your podcast just really touches the entire conversation. And when you go over layer by layer by layer, you're going to come back to the same thing. You're going to come back to it's all about food.
We're going to talk more about that. But first, I want to know about you. So you found out you had diabetes, and then you decided to go on a plant-based diet.
Yes.
So how did you even know that that was the right thing to do?
Well, in 2016, I learned that I was diabetic, like so many other Americans. When they really walk around with diabetes, the numbers of people who go undiagnosed until they start having major health issues are astronomical. And I was one of them, and I consider myself to be normally in tune with my body. In 2016, I was experiencing serious eye loss in my left eye, and I was starting to lose vision loss in my right eye. Now, I was also experiencing nerve damage in my hands and feet. It was tingling, and I thought it was just the feeling you get when your hands fall asleep. And my right thigh went numb also, and I later learned that this was all connected to an advanced stage of diabetes.
Wow.
In addition to an ultra high cholesterol, my numbers were 217 at the time. Blood pressure was high. My PSA was high, which is normally an indicator for prostate cancer. My dad just died a year and a half ago at the time from prostate cancer.
Mine did too.
And when I went to the doctor to look at the pain that I was feeling from the ulcer, he did a colonoscopy and an endoscopy, and after coming from under sedation, he shared with me that, you know, I had an ulcer, but he said, your real problem is your diabetes. You know, I'm looking at your blood right up, and you have an A1C of a 17. He said, I never saw that before. And that is why you're experiencing these other ailments. And after hearing that, he said, I have to put you on medication right away. I'm going to have to put you on insulin right away and several other meds right away. And I was sort of concerned. And I went to five other doctors in the city. And they all said the same thing, that you have to go on medication right away. We have to put you on insulin right away. And when the question was raised, what caused it, they all gave me the different answers. Some said that it was hereditary, because my mother's diabetic, also was a diabetic. Some said it was, you know, I consumed too much carbohydrate. So there was just a different definition across the board. And it wasn't until I decided, well, I like to say, to be very scientific, I went to the computer and Googled reversing diabetes. And the information that came up was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's all there, yeah.
Right. It's right under our nose. And I started to look at sort of doing a cross-reference, because I'm an ex-police officer. I like doing investigations and digging into things and going where the facts lead us. And so when I did cross-references with some of the information from Dr. Essie, we affectionately called him, and Dr.
Caldwell Esselstyn.
Yes.
Neil Barnard, yeah.
And Dr. Greger.
Michael Greger.
I called Dr. Essie, and I shared with him who I was. He told me to come down to see him. When I got to the airport, there was a book that I also saw with Dr. Greger, How Not to Die. I read that going down, and I was like, is this for real? You know, it was so amazing,
yeah,
to read this stuff at, you know, at 50-something years old and just learning all of this information. After seeing Dr. Essie, I was told what to do. He says, Eric, you know, you can really get your diabetes under control if you go to a plant-based diet. I didn't know what a plant-based diet was, whole food plant-based diet. I had no idea what it was.
Wow.
And he explained it, returned to New York 3 weeks after going to a Whole Foods plant-based diet, my vision clears up. 3 months after, my nerve damage in my hands and feet and my thighs went away. The ulcer went away. My cholesterol went from a 217 down to a 57. My A1C went from a 17 to a 5.7. It was just a complete reversal in my entire body makeup. And my doctors were just, they said they have never witnessed anything like this before.
Now I find that hard to believe, that they've never witnessed that before, but okay.
But again, I wish I was on the show before that, because I would have told them it's all about food.
Right, it's all about food. Now, did you find it difficult? Because some people say it's so hard to change your diet and don't know what to do, but you just jumped right in.
I did, and it probably had a lot to do with my, number one, my personality. I'm an all-in kind of guy, and then my police training, where I'm really adhere to rules. What are the rules? What am I supposed to do? But the reality is, I believe patients fall into three sections. One are those who are like me. You could just give us a direction. We're going to go home and we're going to do it on our own. Then you have patient two, I believe, who they need support. And you need to be there with them and help them over the line. And eventually they'll find their way. And then unfortunately, you have patient three, who they just say, give me the medication. And is, you know, you could only keep encouraging them, but they don't believe that they can actually turn around. I was a patient one type of guy. I knew that if there's a way out, I didn't want to lose my sight. It was clear that I was heading down the pathway of blindness. As everyone knows, diabetes is the number one cause of blindness, possibly limb amputation, number one cause of non-trauma limb amputation, insulin, injecting myself every day. Just the thought of being on drugs every day was something that it was not acceptable for me. It was not an option. But it was not something that was just automatic. It was hard. There are days the addictive behavior of sugar, fat, salt, and oil, and it's, you have to wean yourself off. It's not that simple. But once you go, it took me a week for my taste buds to readjust and for me to all of a sudden see the possibilities of really seeing the improvements.
Well, you look great.
I feel great.
And I'm so glad that you are a Brooklyn Borough president, because you're in a place to make significant change. I've been a vegan for 30 years wow. and a vegetarian. I started on my vegetarian journey 45 years ago, and it still thrills me when I hear stories like yours. And it still surprises me that people don't have this information, especially many of our medical doctors. I was just called to serve on a jury last week. I was in this neighborhood serving on a federal criminal court as an alternate juror. And it was a very emotional experience for me. And I saw a bigger picture when I was listening to all of these witnesses and people. Some of them already had said they were guilty of this particular crime. And I saw a much bigger picture. I saw a picture of missed opportunities and exploitation and bad food. Mm. And we know that people from a very young age, children, when they're not fed properly, their learning abilities go down, and it affects their behavior, and they can become more violent. So that's I was feeling all of that last week.
Right.
And plus, when they gave us lunch, maybe we could talk about this later, but the stuff they served us wasn't really very healthy. Okay, so now, how does this change inform who you are and the work that you're doing?
I believe, based on what you just stated, on how you had that experience in court and the connection of that and food, because again, it's all about food. As I sit down now, I feel as though I went through a matrix moment and started to take a red pill and not a blue pill. And life is just a different view after going through that journey. You know, I thought I was buried with diabetes, the weight of diabetes, and in fact, I was planted. And the harvest of that planting is going to really save lives. I'm in a position, a place where if we were a separate city, we would be the third largest city in America with 2.6 million people, very diverse. And the ability to have this conversation to allow people to see that there's hope is so important. And so we are using our time here in Borough Hall to start the process of turning this ocean liner around.
That's
we
a good
are
image.
Showing our faith-based institutions how they could embrace a whole food plant-based lifestyle so they can treat their parishioners and give them the necessary spiritual and emotional support that they need. We are encouraging our hospitals to start off with a meatless Monday and then start to have a conversation and connect it to that. We can't continue to feed the crisis. We are educating our children by having them embrace a meatless Monday or a vegan school or vegetarian school to really start the process of seeing that we don't need meat to survive and what it is doing. We're pushing legislation in the city council that would have we will outlaw processed meat in our schools. It's no secret that the WHO has identified processed meat as being a type 1 carcinogen. If our children are not lighting up Marlboro cigarettes in the morning, they should not be lighting, eating hot dogs. And so we are on a journey to move this conversation forward. And one of the most important and exciting aspects of the journey is what we're doing at Bellevue Hospital, the oldest hospital in America. We finally have a clinic that will be a plant-based clinic. So when Ms. Jones comes in for diabetes-related illnesses or heart disease or other chronic diseases, instead of just giving her medicine to cover up her symptoms, she's now going to be able to go to a clinic where there's going to be a doctor, a nutritionist, and other support. But we're going to introduce this entirely new terminology in medicine, disease reversal. This is an amazing moment to be alive and to participate
in. It is. I'm getting chills just hearing about it. Thank you so much for doing that. And hospitals, we talk about health care and we also talk about sick care. And unfortunately, so many hospitals today, they're treating symptoms. Some they're great at when you have a broken bone or something physical like that. But when it comes to chronic diseases, they've got a long way to go. And I know 12 years ago, I was treated for advanced ovarian cancer. And when I would get fed in the hospital, it was a disaster. I was lecturing to my doctors and dietitians, this is what you need to feed me. And they would bring me a cart of cancer-causing foods and diabetes-causing foods. Yeah, so this is a brilliant thing. Thank you for doing that. Can you talk about the resolution 238?
Great resolution. It is introduced by City Councilperson Cabrera. I spoke with our City Council member, Mark Traeger, who's in charge of the Education Committee. And they're going to hold hearings on this. The resolution is calling for the end of serving processed meat in our school system. It is extremely exciting. California is also pushing through this legislation. PCRM, Physician Committee for Responsible Medicine, they have instituted a lawsuit, and now we are following that energy of doing what they're attempting to do. We're trying to legislate that. Here in New York, our city council, they will pass the local laws, and we believe if we can get it passed here in New York City, we would then attempt to get it passed in Albany while state legislators meet and push through legislation.
Wonderful. I was so excited when I first heard about that earlier this year. And we have a number of plant-based eaters on the council, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
I remember I was at a meeting with Helen Rosenthal where she came out as a vegan that particular day.
And that's a good statement you made because we use that terminology of coming out in New York as a person who has part of the LGBT community so that the people who came out would not be stigmatized or demonized. And that's the same experience with a lot of vegans and those who are plant-based. There was an atmosphere created where you were almost ashamed to be a vegan or plant-based because when you come out, all of a sudden your friends would think something is wrong with you and, oh, we can no longer go out and have dinner with you. And so there's an experience here in the city where people have a desire to heal, and they are now extremely vocal about they do not participate in the slaughtering of animals or the abusive behavior of another living being. Now it's a badge of honor, and it's exciting to be part of that energy.
I'm so excited about everything you're doing. Anything else that you're doing to promote plant-based eating?
One of the top goals that we think we must look at, and that is to shed the belief that veganism, plant-based eating is a white thing or a black thing or any ethnicity. We are showing people that it is not. It's not a white or black thing. It's the right thing. We held a black vegan festival over the summer. The turnout was amazing. Even in the rain, people came out. They participated. We hold meetups here. Vegan and plant-based meetups here at Brooklyn Borough Hall every 3 months where we bring in speakers and answer questions for those who would like to take this journey. We're very excited about the energy that's coming out of it. Just today, a woman stopped me on the street and told me how she really enjoyed the fact that I'm really pushing through this conversation through this borough hall on how we could become a more healthy borough. And it's all of the creative ways of allowing people to have dialogue and answer questions or ask questions in a safe environment where you're not belittled, but you're given the support to really start having a healthier lifestyle.
Now, you have the Your Parks Are Our Parks program, and I'm not that familiar with it, but I know that green space and outdoor space is so important. It's all about food, but some of that food that we take into our body includes sunshine and air, and physical activity is also so important. Does any part of that include like growing food, creating spaces so that people and children especially might have access to growing healthy food?
We have some major projects that are taking place in the borough where we are building greenhouses to do year-round food production. We're spending close to $11 million in the Canarsie section of Brooklyn, another $13 million in the Marlboro, Coney Island section of Brooklyn, and the project in Marlboro, NYCHA development, that's our public housing, that project is going to be a two-story greenhouse where we're going to teach young people how to grow food, how to sell it to the local merchants in the area using different scientific ways of growing food, such as hydroponics and aquaponics. We're also doing a major project in Canarsie that I mentioned that is going to include a classroom. Teachers are going to speak with their students and tell them about the different methods of growing food, what are the types of foods you can grow. And the beauty is that because it is a greenhouse, we could do year-round production. We're extremely excited about those projects, and we have also put a substantial amount of money in our public school system where young people are learning hydroponics and aquaponics and greenhouses and growing some of the food that they're eating in their cafeteria. This is a wonderful experience for young people. I can only imagine how exciting it is to watch lettuce grow and then you pick it and harvest it and then it's part of your lunch. It just makes the conversation so real that food doesn't come from the mystery place in the sky somewhere, that it is actually part of what you are growing. And you're solving your problem. Many of our communities, they have what's called food desert, where you don't have healthy food. And so young people are now saying, I live in a community with food that's a food desert. I can grow the food to answer that question of where our food is coming from and how do we solve a food desert.
It's all about food, and food can solve so many issues, not just our health issues, but it's so much bigger than that. Are you getting any pushback, or is it all support?
You always give pushback. Change is hard, and people have a tendency to believe that change is an attack, and we start out with our fists balled up, and we're ready to just go on the defense. So it's hard, and we know that. We go with the understanding that we're changing not only the taste buds of people, but you're also changing their cultural norms. Food is not only a way that we nourish our body, it is how we socialize. Mm-hmm. It is how we show our love for each other. It's how we experience our unity around family. People will get offended sometimes if you go to an event and you don't want to eat, because it's a way that we identify ourselves. We want to change that definition and show people how you can really love someone if you give them a healthy diet. And no diet seems to really point that out as much as a whole food plant-based diet. And so showing someone real love now is not carving up a turkey on Thanksgiving, but is sparing that turkey and serving them a healthy food choice, so that you're saying, we want to give thanks for everyone that's sitting around the table. We want to give thanks for our health.
I love it. Okay. This is the most important question. Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite foods today?
That's a great question. I love oatmeal. I love lentils. I love different spices. That was probably, out of everything on this journey, the identifying the power of spices blew me away. To learn that those things that we put on our food in hopes of making them taste good, they come with so many additional powers. It's just mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. So once a week on Sundays, I look up a different spice and I dig into it. I learn how to use it. I learn its powers. When you look at amla, a Middle Eastern spice, one of the highest antioxidants known to man. When you look at the relationship between turmeric and pepper, and how pepper allows your liver to absorb turmeric better, and the powers of turmeric. Just so many different spices and what they offer, cinnamon, nutmeg, these different spices that you can put on your food. Not only would it help your food taste good, but they have excellent healing properties. So my best foods, if I had to look at every day, I eat kale every day. I eat kale, red cabbage, red onions every day. All day, no matter what meal I have, I include them into my meal, except for breakfast. Breakfast, I start off with a nice green smoothie and a bowl of fruits so I can break my fast and get my body ready for the day. And it just gives me so much energy when I have that in the morning. And then lunchtime, I would do anything from a great bean pasta with mushrooms and nutritional yeast to get that cheesy flavor that I look for. I use flax seeds to make my bread, which is great all the time. And so there's just so many combinations. And then I explore. I love just mixing food together. Now I fully understand what Mom said is all going to go in the same place, and she's right. You know, the sectionalizing of our meal is something that we created in our heads. There's no reason. Things that people eat for breakfast, there's no reason you can't eat a good, healthy meal for lunch or dinner. Like, I take oatmeal sometimes at night, and I mix it with onions and mushrooms and kale and some cauliflower, and I never knew oatmeal can taste so good. But so those are some of the great meals that I enjoy.
You get an A+ as a plant-based eater. I can't believe it. You've like hit all of the important bells, all the colors and foods. Something that I continue to learn over my decades as eating this way, so many people think they're going to be deprived and that it's so restrictive. And my world just expands. And just in terms of the spices that you're discovering. I mean, there's like some 45,000 varieties of legumes and some 40,000 varieties of rices. It's just an incredible world of plant foods. So delicious.
So true. And it's always fascinating how we define our lives in the wrong place where the accent should go. You know, just as you want to pronounce a term correctly, you got to put the accent on the right letter. We need to define our lives by putting the accent in the right place. Instead of saying what foods you can eat, look at the thousands and thousands of different foods you can eat. And really, when you look at it, my food was limited prior to going whole food plant-based. Monday, I would have the same thing. Tuesday, I would have the same thing. Morning time, I would pick up, you know, two eggs on a roll with some bacon and some cheese. And so sometimes when people say, don't you get tired of, and you're limited? I say, but every morning you eat that same sandwich. So we don't realize how much we're stuck in patterns. And plant-based lifestyle, whole food plant-based lifestyle allowed me to break free of that pattern and really to explore the beauty of food.
Well, Eric Adams, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. And I'm so glad that you've been able to heal yourself and look so fabulous, but not just for yourself, because you are helping so many people, and I know you're going to continue to make a tremendous difference. I support you, and I want to work for you. What can I do to help? It's just amazing.
And as you say, healing other people, I think that charity begins at home. And the most exciting part of this journey was having my mother go from 15 years of being a diabetic, 7 years on insulin, and 57 years of taking blood pressure medicine. And now mother's off her insulin, and she's off her diabetes medicine, and her high blood pressure medicine was cut in half. To me, that says it all, that here it is, you know, basketball players buy their mother a new house. I gave my mother a new body, and I'm happy for that.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for joining me. It's All About Food.
Yes. Thank you.
Wow. Was that amazing? So inspiring. And don't we wish all of our representatives were like Eric Adams? Well, hopefully this is the wave of the future, that there will be more like him. And there are. And that's why it's so important to vote. We've got, here in the United States, midterm elections coming up, and they are so, so critical. If you don't believe it's important to vote, I'd be happy to have a conversation with you to talk about why it is. No representative is going to be aligned with all of what you want. But there are some that support more things than others. And those are the ones we have to go with. It's important to vote. I can't say it enough. And also, it's important to reach out to our representatives. There are lots of viral videos going around right now with women accosting their representatives and saying they were sexually assaulted and they want to be heard. And all of that is good. I think there's value to that. But even more important, we need to be writing and calling and contacting our representatives and educating them, because they don't know everything. And unfortunately, their ear is often poised towards the lobbyist who has profit in mind and not the best interest in society. But we need to be loud. We need to be squeaky. We need to be whiny. But we need to do it with integrity and respect, letting those who represent us know what it is we want. And making healthy, delicious food is a powerful message, an important message, something that we all need to be fighting for, because it's all about foods, folks. It's all about food. We will have better behavior with children and students. We will have more clarity. We will be more effective as adults in the workplace and at home. We will have more patience. We will be healthier. We will feel better. There will be less violence. It's all about food. Can we talk a little bit now? I'm changing the subject, moving on. I want to talk about learning and change. And they're both connected. And they're both challenging. But I believe that it's very important to continue learning all the time and to continue to embrace change. These are really important, especially as we age. So it might be easier to change as we're younger and to learn as we're younger, because we have a lot more capacity for that. Our brains aren't as stuffed with information. They're willing to be uploaded with information. And because we're not as settled or committed or attached to behaviors when we're younger, it's easier to change. We don't have that much invested. But when we have a lot invested, change is harder. And I was making some observations just yesterday. I was visiting with my mom. I've spoken about her from time to time. My dad died in November, and now I'm visiting her on a lot more regular basis. She has mild dementia, and I didn't realize how much that was affecting her, because my dad did a good job of making everything seem normal. And now it's more apparent to me what a struggle it is, and the challenges that she has. And change is really, really difficult. So changing, getting her a new cell phone when the old cell phone was really on its last leg, last ping. We got a new one. And even though I tried to keep it as similar as the old one, we can't help keep technology in place, because upgrades keep happening and formats keep changing, and her flip phone isn't the same as her old one, and it's challenging because nothing is exactly the same. And with people with these kind of mental challenges, change is harder. And the same thing happened, because we just got our new computer. Her last computer died, and I try to keep everything as simple as possible. I just put a few things on her desktop, things that I know she's interested in, email and Facebook. But it's challenging because formats change, and browsers update their formats, and the mail companies change their format with how we access email. Things keep changing, and it's frustrating for many of us when changes are made that we didn't sign up for. Okay, what am I getting at? Well, while I was there, I started thinking about her eating habits, which have really settled into a routine. Not a very healthy one, but it's her choice, and I'm letting her go with it. You know, over the decades, she raised 3 vegan children. It wasn't her idea, but me and my siblings went vegan. And she accommodated us all very, very well. She created some wonderful recipes. Some of them are actually on my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. I give her 100% credit for our vegan chopped liver recipe, which is such a delicious and simple recipe made from sauteed onions, green beans, walnuts, and a little oil. It's really lovely. And it's so much better than the original recipe, which came from chopped chicken livers and a lot of what we call schmaltz, which is the chicken fat. She always wanted to make sure there was plenty of food to eat, and even when you had enough, she wanted to give you more. And she's still like that. But she settled into a collection of foods that she goes to eat, and that consists of burgers, plain, not on a bun or anything, and Munster cheese, a little bread, not a lot, fruit. She's good with some fruit. She likes pineapple and melons, oranges, and grapes. Not a big fan of apples. And tomatoes and onions and cauliflower. She always says cauliflower is her favorite vegetable. And when I do the food shopping, I know what to get because there are all these simple foods. I always buy her a bag of romaine. I know she likes romaine, but I've found that over time, she really doesn't want to make salads anymore. And she loves salads and used to love making them, but that's changed. When we go out, I typically bring her to the Cheesecake Factory. Funny place, cheesecake. When are they going to have a vegan cheesecake? I keep asking. But they do make a vegan Cobb salad, which is very good. And she loves it. Okay, so I would love her to eat more salad. But she's just not into preparing it. She doesn't have the energy or the motivation. And potatoes. Sweet potatoes. She'll make potatoes and sweet potatoes. So there's some good things that she likes to eat. And I'm always buying the same things for her because I know what she makes and what she likes. And I was trying to think about it. And I thought about rice because I was trying to make her options a little more varied. It's important to eat a diverse diet. Diversity is important, not just with food, with everything, but it's very important with food to eat a colorful, varied diet. And I was thinking maybe I could buy her some whole grains. And then I realized she is really not familiar with how to cook whole grains. Now, my mom always cooked. When we were young, there would be a home-cooked meal on the table for dinner. She made us our lunches. We did eat the box cereals for breakfast, unfortunately. But she did cook, and she made a nice selection of typical omnivore meals. But I realized she never really dabbled in whole grains, except for Uncle Ben's minute rice. She would make this Uncle Ben's minute rice. And very often it was made with chicken broth and perhaps some other seasonings. But I thought about it and realized she never really made rice from scratch or any other grain. Occasionally, she would make a vegetable soup that had barley in it, which was fantastic. But it typically came in a package that had all the beans and grains in it together. And I just wondered, why is that? How does that happen? So when I was on my own, growing up in college and after college, I discovered whole grains and I learned how to make rice, white rice and brown rice. And it's pretty straightforward. You take a cup of grain and you add 2 cups of water to it. You put it in a pot, bring it to a boil, turn it down to a simmer, cover it. And in about a half hour, your grains are cooked. The key is not to touch them because these air pockets that develop from the boiling of the water and the grain are important in the cooking process so that the grains are kind of surrounded by air in addition to liquid. And some people opt for a rice cooker. They say it's easier, but I never found cooking whole grains terribly difficult. And I've now extended that to millet and quinoa and buckwheat. They all have different cooking times, and I tend to add more water to millet, for example. I like cooking it with more water, but they're all pretty similar. And I just wonder what was it back then that kept her from learning how to cook whole grains. Well, you know, she was trained by commercials and society, and getting a minute rice was, I guess, better than a rice that took 30 to 45 minutes to cook. And she likes rice. We've eaten in many Chinese restaurants that always offered rice, and we used to get white rice. And then as time went on, we got brown rice. And she always asks for brown rice, and she likes it. And she'll bring it home when she doesn't eat all of it. So she likes it. But she has never made it. And now she's at a point where learning is difficult and change is difficult, and she's not going to learn how to make rice on her own. So that's not an option. And that's what got me thinking about learning and change. And I encourage all of you to continue learning. I'm grateful that you're listening to this podcast because you want to learn. But there's activities too that need to happen that we can teach ourselves how to do things. We're here to learn. We're here on this planet to learn. So I encourage you to learn. If there are foods that you're curious about, maybe something you like, you've had it in a restaurant, find it and learn how to prepare it. It'll be good for you, especially as we age. I recommend learning as much as you can because there may come a point where you're challenged with learning if dementia and Alzheimer's are in your future. I don't wish it on anybody. But I think the more skills you can get now will help you later. Now, if you haven't heard, Alzheimer's and dementia are preventable and in many cases can be reversed to some degree. And this is new information that's come out in the last few years. It's very exciting, very encouraging. And is anyone surprised that a whole food plant-based diet is what supports a healthy brain? Now I want to talk about hemp seeds. I love hemp seeds. They're very nutritious. They're high in omega-3 fatty acids. And it's illegal to grow them in the United States, the hemp plant. This is crazy. The United States is the largest consumer of hemp products in the world. Now, what's going to change our policy for growing hemp in the United States? Money. Because our policymakers are finally realizing that industrial hemp holds great potential to bolster the agricultural economy in the United States. And our very polarized government, without exception, without objection, back in June, adopted legislation recognizing the growing economic potential of industrial hemp. It's got a ways to go before it's made into law, because right now it was just a resolution and it was passed to commemorate Hemp History Week. Okay, I didn't know that there was Hemp History Week, but apparently there is, and it was back in June. But hopefully we'll get to a point where we can legally grow hemp in this country. And why do I personally want that? Because hemp seeds are expensive because we import them. And I like them. They're the easiest thing to make milk with. If you take the hemp seeds and just whir them up in a blender with water, they make a lovely, nutritious milk. And they're good for lots of other things. So I got a deal recently and I bought a couple of pounds of hemp seeds. I created a new recipe that I put on Responsible Eating and Living's website. It's a salad dressing and it's quick and easy and yummy. We always make our dressings from sesame seeds, but I thought, let's try hemp seeds for a change. What I did was I blended the hemp seeds with water, of course, and lemon. Now this time, since I was using a blender and I've got a high speed blender, I didn't squeeze the lemon juice. I just cut the peel off the lemon and plopped it in the blender. It was easier this way. And it gave a really nice lemony flavor. And it made a wonderful dressing. And then when I made it again, I thought, okay, let's change this up a little bit. And I, instead of using all hemp seeds, I thought I'd make it a little richer or a little oilier. And so I added walnuts, which are oilier when you blend them up. I used lime instead of lemons, peeling them again. I just used a knife and I cut off the rind. and I added a quarter red onion. Pop! It was a wonderful salad dressing. Really, really great. The recipe's up there at Responsible Eating and Living, and I encourage you to try it. As I said, hemp seeds are really, really good for you. Hopefully one day they'll be legal in the United States. I remember somebody telling me on this show that it was illegal to consume hemp seeds, I think in Australia. It's a crazy world we live in, isn't it? I also added a couple of other recipes that I want to talk about. And one is a simple green cabbage salad. Now, I know a lot of people in my culture are familiar with coleslaw. And there are different kinds of coleslaw where green cabbage is grated into thin strips and mixed with other vegetables, like maybe a few carrots, maybe some onions, and then tossed with either a mayonnaise kind of dressing or a vinegar kind of dressing. And these are great. Of course, I use a vegan mayonnaise, either store-bought or we make our own at home, or it even could be a hemp seed dressing instead of mayonnaise. And these are great. But all of a sudden I got this craving for a cabbage salad where the cabbage was used like a lettuce leaf. Big pieces of cabbage, not finely grated. And it brought me back to a time when I was 12 years old and I was invited over for dinner at my best friend's house. And her stepmom was from Chile, I believe, and the stepmom's mom was there. She didn't speak any English. So a lot of the food that they ate came from this traditional Chile background. And I think that's where this cabbage salad came from, because we sat down for dinner. They plopped down this plate of, or a bowl of cabbage salad, which was just the big pieces of cabbage, maybe a little carrot, maybe a little onion, and a vinegar dressing. And I didn't know what to do with it. I mean, I had to eat it. I was polite. But I was used to iceberg lettuce salads at the time. I wasn't even venturing out into the darker, chewier greens that I eat today. But a cabbage salad was really, really strange to me. And this was something I was like thinking of and craving the other day. And I made a cabbage salad. You can get that recipe at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And I tossed it with the hemp seed dressing. So the hemp seed dressing is white and creamy, and it's a little like a mayonnaise-y kind of dressing. So I thought it would go really well, and it did. So you might want to check that out. What I really like when I make salads, this is something that really tickles my tongue. I don't use salt. I got a thing about salt. But occasionally I'll use a condiment or something that's salty. And in my salads, I love olives. I don't use a lot. Maybe I'll chop a really good olive, like a black wrinkled olive or a Kalamata olive. Take the pits out. And I'll chop them really fine and make about 2 tablespoons worth of chopped olives. And I'll add that to our salad for 2 people. And it makes all the difference. It just, gives you that little tickle of salt without really getting a huge dose of salt in your diet. So I love that in salads. It really wakes them up. And plus, I love the taste of olive oil. I don't use the oil. I get that delicious flavor from the whole food, the olive. What a concept, right? The last recipe I want to talk about, I may have mentioned this before. It's like my new quick and easy go-to evening dessert. And I also use it early in the morning. It's a banana custard cream, and it's made from bananas and water and peanut butter. And if you want, you can use another nut butter if you don't care for peanut butter, but we like peanut butter. We're not eating as much peanut butter as we normally do, but I'd like mixing it in with the bananas. The first time I did it, I took a frozen banana from the freezer because we didn't have any fresh ones. And I just cut it up and put it in a saucepan with a little water and the peanut butter. And as it was heating up, I used a wooden spoon and mashed the banana. And I mashed it all together until it became creamy. And like I said, I did this right in the saucepan. I didn't use a blender or a mixing bowl or anything. I just stood over it, let it warm up, and the whole thing took about 5 minutes to heat up and to mash it. And when I was done, I had this nice, rich, creamy spread or sauce that I thought I would use on some crepes that I had just made. So this was for the morning. And I poured it into some little ramekins. And the spread firmed up a little bit. It was still spreadable, but it wasn't as runny as it was when it was in the pot. But just delicious. So simple, so yummy. And I've made it again with using fresh bananas because I didn't have frozen anymore. I had fresh. And as long as the bananas are ripe and sweet, it's really good. So that recipe is up at responsibilityandliving.com. And it's just crazy simple. I especially like it as an evening dessert because bananas have melatonin in them and they kind of help you get ready for the evening and going to sleep. So that's the last thing I'm going to share with you today. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food. Remember, you can find me at responsibilityandliving.com. That's where those recipes are. Send me an email at info@realmeals.org. And please, have a very delicious week. Bye-bye.